How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
And welcome to the 19th hole presented by Golf Talk Live. I am Alan DePew. As always, I am joined by Christian Nazamas. Hello, Christian.
How you doing?
And Andrew DePew. Hello, Andrew.
How's it going, guys?
And if you are watching our video version, you see we have a fourth sitting in our virtual 19th hole. Jay Caron, Executive Director of the National Golf Course Owners Association, kind enough to sit in and join us as we kick back, talk a little shop, find out what's going on from your perspective in the business. Jay, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to talk shop with you guys.
Absolutely. So we were just comparing before we got on air because you're down in Charleston. Andrew was down in Charleston for a little bit of time. And I think we're going to, before the show's over, probably map out all the great restaurants when you're in the Charleston area this year.
I still have a list over right in my closet over here. So I got the list anytime I go back that I got to hit. I got to hit a certain order of them. So
this is an amazing town for that. Amazing.
Because, you know, that's what we do. We want to make sure that the complete golf experience includes food and beverages. And if you're heading down for the PGA Championship, hopefully we have fans for the PGA Championship. But there you go. And boys, how was your week?
I mean, overall, it's been busy on the other work front, but I'm excited to get to talk golf. It's not very often during the cold winter months that we get to talk golf, so anytime's a good time. So,
well, we talk golf quite a bit, and usually it's talk. And when you combine work and golf, that's usually discussing your putting stroke.
We're not even 2 minutes into the show and we're already hitting this. This is Jay. Do you understand what I have to deal with now on a weekly basis? But no, listen, I've been super busy, but I have kept my practice going, and that's due to our good friends over at Perfect Practice Putting Mats. I know we always give them the shameless plug that they rightfully deserve. They have helped my putting stroke 110%. No questions asked about it. Although I guess I'm still not to you guys' level because you still bust on me, but would not be, you know, without those guys. You can roll them up and take them anywhere, hotel rooms, one little bedroom apartment like I'm in, you know, houses, wherever works best for you guys. So if you are looking for a great way to work on your putting stroke during the off season, which obviously everyone is trying to be better when they get back to the golf season, you got to try them out. Use our code GTL15 for 15% off. Again, that's GTL15 for 15% off today on your purchase. And hopefully your friends will stop bugging you about your putting stroke like I'm hoping these two will. So anyway, that's my shameless plug for the night. And maybe we can get to actual good conversation.
I think we should. So, Jay, thank you for bearing with us as we deep dive once again into Andrew's struggles on the putting surface.
Well, don't you want him to continue to struggle if you want to win money against him?
I mean, it's
here's the sad thing, though, Jay. They harp on me, but the only one that's able to take money away from me is still at this point is Christian. He definitely can't down here. If you are watching the video, it's down to the right hand corner. I'm pointing. He can't take money from me, no matter how bad my putting is, because he can't keep up to me. So it's funny that he's the one that's still chirping the most.
Christian, you got anything to say about that?
Hey. What I was up seeing Andrew this past weekend. I saw the Perfect Practice mat. He is somewhat getting better, but again, Andrew can't beat me on a golf course no matter where we are. So,
and that putting stroke is carnage. I mean, it's right there. But we didn't come here to talk about that. We didn't ask our friend to join us to talk about Andrew's putting stroke. We'll get that on full display when we go down to Charleston on a road trip here. But, Jay, why don't you tell us a little bit about the National Golf Course Owners Association? Obviously, I do, but for the average person that's listening or average listener that's tuning in, tell them a little bit about what you do, who you represent, which you represent a great group of people.
All right. So, you know, there's an association for anything in America, any trade, any profession, any industry. And in the golf industry, we have an alphabet soup of associations, but the ones that are kind of household names that, you know, the listeners might, you know, be aware of course, are the PGA of America, LPGA, PGA Tour, USGA. And those are really game governing bodies where, although the PGA of America is a trade association as well, because they serve the interests of all of the professionals that work at the golf courses. But we represent the men and women and corporations that own and operate the golf courses around America. Primarily public golf courses are our bread and butter, but we still have about 600 private clubs in the organization. We have nearly 4,000 courses in America in our organization. We're headquartered in Charleston, South Carolina. And the primary things we do, guys, we have a lot of education from the Golf Business Conference, Golf Business Magazine, Golf Business Podcast, Golf Business Live shows, and you know, all kinds of things that we publish and produce out there. We also do advocacy work. So we're in Washington, D.C., working on environmental, taxation, labor, other issues that impact the golf industry. And we also strike deals with some great vendors in our industry so that our members can save money or get rebates on certain products for their golf course. So it's pretty comprehensive, quintessential trade association for the golf course business.
And I was going to say, obviously, I'm aware of this being in the industry for a long time. That's why I have the gray hairs. Advocacy in 2020, it was on overdrive, I'm sure, by every one of your chapters and yourself. And can you just elaborate the challenges that you must have been facing up and down the East Coast and across the country for that matter?
Yeah, you bet. I mean, our advocacy chops in the industry were pressure tested this year like never before. And we were all in it, Alan. All the associations collaborated together. So where, you know, NGCOA might have our own issue that we work on separately from the other organizations, but when COVID started wreaking havoc in March and golf courses were going to be shut down, we knew it was going to be literally an existential threat for our industry. That there are something like 25% of golf courses reported prior to the pandemic that they were in financial trouble, right? So when you're a small business and you're in financial trouble, it usually means you don't have enough cash flow for the following month. You're just going month to month as a business. You're just getting payroll through and all of that kind of stuff. So if courses were gonna be forced to shut down for weeks or months, who knew, that could have meant closing shop for hundreds or maybe even, you know, a couple thousand golf courses. So we sprang into action, the allied organizations under the umbrella of We Are Golf. And we essentially had a national strategy to make sure that golf was not discriminated against when it came to whatever disaster relief was coming. Because there's a history in Washington of saying, hey, here's some disaster relief for that storm that hit, or here's some economic stimulus legislation. Oh, but golf industry, you don't get to partake in this. You're an exception. You don't get to do that. There's a history of that. And so we had a guard against that on the national level, which we were successful in for the most part, except for private clubs that are organized under 501c7 status, which is kind of private or nonprofit private clubs, which there are a lot of them out there. They did not qualify for some of the financial relief. So that was one thing. But then at the state level, as you mentioned, Alan, like all of our affiliates and chapters and local organizations had to mobilize at the same time, because a lot of governors and mayors and county councils were making localized decisions on who gets to be open, who doesn't, at what capacity, all that. And at the end of the day, we were able to craft a compelling message that golf was an exception to, you know, what was getting shut down, that as an outdoor activity spread over 200 acres of land, you know, people could socially distance and play the game and stay alive, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. And that argument won the day. And we early on, NGCOA came out first with our what we called our park and play program. And we got blessed by some physicians from the Infectious Diseases Society of America early on. They looked at our checklist basically so that a golfer could go from the parking lot to the first tee, play around a golf, get back to the parking lot, not touch anything.
Not touch a thing. Yep.
Yeah. And so that was the first thing that we launched out there. A lot of courses adopted it immediately because they needed to show their government officials, hey, we're taking responsibility for this. And so that was the first thing. And then it evolved into back to golf with the PGA of America and the CDC involvement and all of the other organizations blessed and got involved in this to produce a more comprehensive document that at the time would comport with President Trump's kind of three-phase plan on opening businesses. And so, but by and large, guys, you know, the industry came through really, really well, as we know, you know, from hindsight. But the advocacy was pressure tested, and I would say we succeeded.
Well, I concur with you by saying golf has always had the challenge of determining what it is, whether it's an asset class or what people look at it as, is it recreation? Is it a business? They really never know where to place it. And I think that sometimes presents to be a challenge. And I know a great friend here of Golf Talk Live, Joel Moore, is going to be an award winner for this coming year. For he did some monumental work up here in New Jersey. The course that I manage, Eagle Ridge up here, faced 5 weeks of closure, another 2.5 weeks of 25% inventory, another 2 weeks of 50%. And Joel was there the whole time on the front end, just, you know, constantly speaking with Trenton, trying to make things happen. And kudos again to him for the work he did. And I'm glad to see that the Nationals actually going to be recognizing him. But Christian, one of the things we were talking about, and perhaps Jay, you could elaborate, but Christian, the numbers nationwide are up like 25%. If you look at the national statistics, obviously there's isolated cases. We've heard some of that where maybe the numbers aren't. Christian, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, first off, 2020 was a very tough year for everybody. And I think that, you know, looking at it from a golf standpoint, you know, I live on a golf course here in Syracuse, and I've seen a lot of different play come through. And actually at my home course here in Syracuse, I've noticed that a lot of people that were playing golf were actually wearing masks and stuff like that while they were playing. And they were also keeping their distance as well, which is a very good sign, good, you know, plus and everything like that. So, you know, just from like the golf side of things, I'm not surprised that the numbers were up, to be honest with you. I think a lot of people kind of looked at that as, you know, I need to stay socially distanced away from people, but I also love the game of golf. And you can kind of definitely intertwine both of those at the same token. You can keep your 6 feet of distance from people, as well as you can also play the game that you love too. And I hats off to numerous golf courses around the entire country also too, for keeping foams in the cups as well, trying to stop the virus from spreading. I think that was a great, great, great idea. And I don't know if it'll continue here in 2021. I know vaccines now are coming out and stuff like that, so we'll have to see what happens here moving forward. But again, golf's just a great sport, and I'm happy that the numbers were up.
Yeah, you know, we were the beneficiary of some unexpected, and I would call them artificial demand variables that worked in our favor. Like, well, everything else shut down, right? And so the things that people would otherwise do shut down. So that created a natural supply and demand, environment in our favor, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, people that were staying at home, the whole work environment changed, where people are working from home, flexible hours, and, oh my God, I've been working since 6:30 at my desk here. I'm going to break away at 3. Let me go play. Hey, I got time to get 9 holes in. The whole time dynamic opened up an opportunity for people to get out and go do something. And money. I mean, you know, nobody's traveling, right? Or few people were traveling. So those family vacations where you might have allocated a couple $1,000, you know, for the family vacation over the summer, well, that's not going to happen, honey, you know, and we're not going anywhere. So open up the wallet a little bit to spend money at the club or at the course or what have you. So a lot of interesting variables worked in our favor. And, you know, the question about, is it going to stay around, right? Is it going to stick? And as long as COVID is a reality in our society, I think we'll still see the similar patterns. We'll kind of still be the beneficiary of a lot of those things. But when the vaccine makes its way through and there's no other virus that's following COVID, let's say, assuming, hoping, crossing your fingers in that sense, then I'm a little bit bullish on the, I would call it the organic retention of the people that found golf this last year. Because, you know, the last time we saw this increase in demand was Tiger Woods when he first came on the scene nearly 25 years ago. It was 1996. So we saw this interest spike, but it was for, I would call it, celebrity reasons. People like, wow, let me check out this thing called golf because of this cool guy, Tiger Woods. And I wrote about this recently. I said, that's kind of like me when I was a kid and I decided to play Little League Baseball because I like Pete Rose. Pete Rose has nothing to do with my ability to swing a bat at home plate and do I like this or not. And so a lot of people came to golf in the late 90s and they didn't stick around, right? They came to it because of the magnetism of the Tiger phenomenon and all that. Well, this past year, you know, so many people found golf because of the very reasons that they'll stay with golf. I want to get outside. I want to spend time with my friends. I want to enjoy this, you know, athletic pursuit, this challenge. And so if that's what drew them to it, then there's just a much better chance for organic retention over time.
So I guess my thing, and I want to make sure I don't forget it. So I apologize, Christian, for cutting you off. Jay, you mentioned a bunch of different things about obviously the Tiger effect. We've talked about it, a bunch of different things that you mentioned. First and foremost, I think the big one is, you know, does this continue, right? Does this continue to stay moving forward in 2021? And I think for my opinion and for a lot of our opinions here, I actually feel like you're going to see that continuing because of the average guy or girl was able to get out and play. And this is what they've come accustomed to. You did mention, though, and I'm curious if you feel, obviously, it seems like you may feel a little bit differently just from like the traveling standpoint because of obviously the safety. But we actually were mentioning recently on a show, like, I actually think that you're going to see more people making those close-knit trips. You know, like Christian and myself going and getting in the car and driving, you know, maybe not cross country, but, you know, making those short little range trips that we can do because we don't have that, you know, maybe big golf trip. But do you think that coming out of COVID that that's going to still be the case? Like I see almost the opposite effect. I think when you get fully able to, you know, have these long road trips or these, you know, let's go to Charleston for a weekend and play golf. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of those average golfers who've never had that chance to do a golf trip before actually do that and take advantage of it here moving forward.
I think you're right. This is certainly going to be, there's going to be pent up desire to get the hell out, go out on the road, go have a good time because of, you know, what's been happening. So I think that pent up
desire,
yeah, it's going to drive those shorter trips, like those drive trips, or maybe, hey, Southwest has got a direct flight to Baltimore. We're quick, you know, thing for $49. Let's get on the plane and let's go. You might see that smaller trip for the demand for that to be pretty high. So I agree with you. I think you're going to see that. I do think though, for golf course operators, that they should not bank on the level of demand that we're seeing plateauing at this level. I think they should anticipate it going maybe back to where it was in 2019 and like plan for that. But anything, if we ride this, then that's gravy. And that's gravy for capital expenditures, that's gravy for whatever, but don't bank on it. I wouldn't like say, oh, this is the new normal, because we're still in an abnormal situation. We're not in the new normal because we're still in COVID, right?
Right.
So I would advise course operators still play it conservatively. And if we benefit from this, then great. And I also think there's another variable that's different between now and 25 years ago, is that golf course operators are better and smarter than they were 25 years ago. There was a lot of hubris about running a golf course that is like, oh, we got our 40,000 rounds last year, we'll get it next year. There was just an anticipation or the expectation of success. And then the Great Recession hits in 2007, 2008. And that changed the DNA of the operator and how they approach their business. It was the first time that the wind had been taken out of the sails of the industry, right? And so now we've had 15 years of trying to get smarter on your operations. So if you now marry smarter operators with an increase in demand, my hope is that that's a calculus for, we're not gonna screw this up. We're gonna take care of the customer. We got better, you know, customer relationship management software to track them, to remarket to them. We've learned about how to do one-to-one marketing with these folks. So my hope is that all of that combined will lead to better growth and retention. But again, I'm a conservative budgeter. I would not say we did, you know, 33,000 this year. Let's count on that next year.
Would you, let me ask you this then, I guess the next point to the new golfer, you know, question, or the next, like, I guess 1B to it is obviously these, let's say like Topgolf is a great example, right? That's been coming out recently. There's other ones that are obviously popping up, but you know, it's the big one that's on stage. It's getting more people that have never even tried golf into at least trying it in a different way. You know, we've talked about, we think that the Topgolf merger with Callaway is going to be a huge thing for growing the game. But from a course operator's perspective, or those, for again, our average listeners that are just starting the game, you know, how do you make that transition in your mind to continuing it and taking it to the course? Because obviously it's great to go to the driving range, but let's face it, we want them obviously playing rounds of golf eventually. So, you know, what's your opinion on how we take that next step, or how we should have our listeners take that next step to trying, you know, the course instead of just the driving range or the Top Golf?
Wow, great question. Top Golf has been kind of the darling of the industry now for the past, let's say, 5 years, right? I mean, right. it's the shiny new object, and rightly so. It's fun. It's a good time. It's the answer to what do you do on Friday night if you have a Top Golf in your market, right? Not every market has it. Like, you know, it used to be the bowling alley. Every city and town had a bowling alley. It's what you did on Friday nights.
Well, it's golf meets bowling meets darts is the way to look at it. And then you throw in great food and entertainment, and that's what it is.
It's a great experience, and you know their primary revenue, you know, is obviously the food and beverage. You know, it's just a killer food and beverage operations, and so it's great. And the issue here is that, you know, that the question you're asking, Andrew, has been asked since the beginning. Like, how is this going to translate to golfers going to the green grass shops, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the easy answer is for a local course that has proximity to a Top Golf is to form a partnership of some kind. Obviously, you say, look, you're at Top Golf, you want to try the outdoor, the real thing on grass. Hey, check out, you know, ABC Golf Course here nearby, and there's some kind of reciprocity. In that case, the Top Golf would expect the golf course to try to push people their way too, right? So a local kind of reciprocal relationship is the boots on the ground way of trying to do that. But on the macro sense, Top Golf, you know, owned by Callaway, and I know Chip Brewer, and you know, it's a great company, great leadership there. They're interested in having their customers come to Top Golf, right? Mm-hmm. Unless Callaway's buying golf courses, you know, while there's going to be symbiosis and friendships around the industry, they want customers coming back and back and back again to Top Golf. And so for the owners and operators, don't fool yourself in asking the question, hey, when are we going to see some of that, right? What I'm trying to change the conversation, and I have been for 4 years, say, look, what are they doing that you can emulate at your facility? And that is build out the simulator business, build a golf entertainment business at your facility. And because these simulators are freaking amazing. I mean, they are fun. You can, you know, to play Pebble Beach, you know, and have, you know, beers with your friends and just do it's a lot of fun in that no embarrassment kind of zone, which a lot of people introduce, you know, when they introduce themselves to golf through Top Golf, they like it because they're not going to be embarrassed. They're not worried about, you know, the people out on the golf course looking at them saying, oh, hurry up, what are you doing? Simulator emulates that. You can do the same thing and have fun and be stupid and not be good and have a good time. So that, and then you gain the revenue from the food and beverage and the fees to rent and there are courses that are now doing that. So I think the best answer is to try to emulate what people love about Top Golf and figure out a way to bring that to your own customers through your business.
I think that'll actually be pretty cool too, especially with some courses up here in the North, when we only get to play 5 or 6 months out of the year. I think it'd be really cool if they could kind of incorporate an outside, you know, heating type of simulator where you can hit balls inside, but you can also see where they're going as well, but also still have that feel to a Pebble Beach type of thing or a Harbor Town or, you know, wherever you wanted to play. I think that'd be pretty cool if they could, you know, kind of incorporate that in the Northern courses.
Well, to Jay's point, I'm just going to, let me give a shout out actually, the Pease Golf Course. It's Pease Development Corporation owns it up at Pease, old Air Force Base. And I actually did consulting on that property almost 20 years ago now. Advised them to do a number of things. They actually took that and built upon it. And Jay, it should be a poster child. They have three beautiful simulators right off their grill room, private separate room, table service, wings, beer, simulator. They paid for their simulators in a year. It's insane how much. And if you are an operator in the North, you should be looking at this as an opportunity and as a revenue stream.
Absolutely. You know, the way I've been trying to explain it to folks is, look, in the golf industry, the cash register stops ringing when the sun goes down or when it's raining or when it's snowing, right? That's it. And everybody's focused on how many more rounds of golf can I get on the first tee? That, like, if I'm going to build revenue, how do I get more rounds, traditional rounds? Like, no. It is all about revenue. So how do you get more revenue? You know, don't worry so much about that. Look at this. If you, in Top Tracer, and Top Golf figured it out too. They have Top Tracer range. They're selling these systems to golf courses, building these entertainment stations on the driving range for that very reason. So their tentacles are in the green grass side of the business for sure. And, you know, so imagine the cash register ringing when the sun goes down, when it's raining, all that kind of stuff. So no matter where you are, it doesn't have to be the north.
If I may, I'm going to give a shameless plug here, but we have a great relationship. Our winter tournament series is played at Play Around Golf here in Philadelphia at Malvern and at their Ardmore store. They are a perfect, if you are a golf course in this general market, daily fee, you should be aligning yourself. If you don't want to sink the massive investment in, you should align yourself with the Steve Graves who operates those properties. There is opportunity for everybody to take a bite of the apple.
You know, and to that, I actually, so funny that you mentioned that, because our president is Steve Grable, and he has Fox Chase out.
Yes, he does. Yep.
Yeah, Lancaster County and in Stevens, it's near Ephrata. And I wrote a column and I was calling him out. I was like, look, you know, why don't you go down into Ephrata and breathe some life into a corner drugstore that shut down years ago? Because every town has a Walgreens that is empty or whatever, or retail space is empty, and build a satellite location of Fox Chase. You know, don't let someone else do it. You do it. You know the golf business. You've got a database of thousands already. Go in there. And these places that have empty retail spots, the owners of those buildings, I'm sure, are willing to give, you know, amazing rates on leases. If you came in there, put in 10 simulators and kind of built out a simulator business in these old retail shops, I think that's the answer. Because then you're cultivating customers over there you can send to Fox Chase. At Fox Chase, you're cultivating customers you can send over to the simulator entertainment business. To me, I think the existing golf course operator is the one who should be doing that, not waiting for someone else to do it and trying to form a partnership.
The only other question I guess I do have for you, and obviously, again, you know, you've been answering a lot of questions, so I don't want to make you seem like you're getting, you know, rapid fire here, but
throw at me.
You know, obviously we mentioned before, and we mentioned right off the get-go to the listeners that obviously we have the connection with Charleston. What's your thoughts, obviously, with the possibility of having the PGA with fans and what that will mean to the Charleston market? There's a ton of phenomenal properties, as you mentioned, down in that area that, you know, people can go and play if they do decide to go down there. Right off the get-go, you know, you got Patriots Point that's right out on the coast and bay. There's just so many. So what do you think something like that means to a local community like Charleston, you know, like Kiowa and like that area, to host a major of that kind of quality?
Well, I know they've measured the economic impact of having a tournament for the city. The city of Charleston's Convention and Visitors Bureau has measured it. It's in the millions, you know, millions and millions of dollars it brings to a community. And Kiowa is a showcase location. There's no question about it. Was it the 91 Ryder Cup?
91 Ryder Cup. Yep.
Yeah, they had just opened. I mean, it was like just opened, you know? And so it means a great deal to the resort without question, you know, to have that kind of badge of honor that, you know, you host a major championship. And, you know, Charleston is a unique place. You know, some of the earliest evidence of golf in America is here in Charleston. In fact, I think they claim to be kind of the birthplace of golf, or at least the first evidence of golf in America was in Charleston, dating back to like the 1600s, some reference to a golf club here or something like that. So, you know, Charleston likes to claim a lot. But, you know, the municipal golf course just got a huge, the Muni here just got an enormous.
Oh, they renovation. Just went through a massive renovation. Yeah, I saw that on Facebook, and it looks incredible.
Yeah, so, you know, there are dozens of public courses here, some of the world-class private clubs as well. So, you know, it's kind of a golfer's dream to come here and make a road trip. You know, if you're going to come to the PGA Championship, you know, cross fingers that they'll have the patrons. I from what I understand, ticket sales were off the charts for the championship. So that's good. And if they're able to come and have the patrons, it's not my game to know, you know, what's appropriate there. You know, should you require negative test results in order to be, you know, I don't know that game. I'm not in the business of running, you know, events like that. And so I don't know what it's going to take to approve patrons coming to the course, but God, I hope they're able to by then.
I think we need to get Don Ray back on here and just put the spotlight on him right now and ask him.
You know, he's got at Augusta Ranch, he's got a 6-foot COVID stick, right? His social distance stick. I mean, he's got this PVC thing, 6 feet long. You know, everybody's supposed to, he walks around that facility, breaks out the PVC, you know. So we need Don Ray, Secretary of the PGA of America, walking around the ocean course, you know, are you 6 feet apart? You know, and just kind of the PVC police there. That would be pretty funny.
I'll tell you one last thing off of the resort down there. I mean, I have gone down there and played, I believe it's Turtle Point Turtle Point. That whole venue down there, just as a resort as its own right, is immaculate. I mean, if people are looking for a place to go play, it's definitely one that you've got to have on your checklist. But I definitely appreciate it. And obviously with the Charleston, I had to ask, because Charleston's obviously got a special place in my heart at this point now. So
the whole state of South Carolina gets behind these kinds of events, you know, because we don't get to have world-class, top shelf, you know, athletic events in this state too often. We don't have any professional level, you know, we don't have an NFL team, MLB. We don't have any of that in South Carolina. We got great college football and college sports. But so when something like that comes to South Carolina, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to the state.
Well, every year though, you got this really cool event right across the border from Aiken there in Augusta that takes place. So, I mean,
that is true. A lot of folks do drive. There's a sucking sound of all the people leaving the low country driving down, you know, I-20 through, you know, to get to Augusta. There's no question about that.
Well, Jay, I'll tell you what. Don't want to take up too much of your time. Appreciate you hanging out with us in the 19th hole for a little bit. We're actually going to take a step away for a word from one of our golf course owners here in the Philadelphia market. And you're welcome. Open invitation. Please join us. We usually try to kick back and have a beverage. Usually it's an adult beverage if we're talking about Andrew's putting stroke, but you're welcome anytime, my friend.
Thank you. Look forward to coming back. Really do, guys. Thank you.
All right. Jay Caron, the Executive Director of the National Golf Course Owners Association.
Conveniently located in Harleysville, just off the Lansdale exit of the Northeast Extension, the player-friendly Mainland Golf Course offers excellent playing conditions at affordable rates. It is a perfect host site for your next corporate outing. And after each round, the golf experience at Mainland Golf Course can be enhanced by visiting the Mainland Grill, serving lunch and dinner daily. For more information, go to mainlandgolf.com. And don't forget their sister courses, Bella Vista Golf Course in Gilbertsville and Morgan Hill in Easton.
Guys, it was great to have Jay on. You know, we definitely got to work our way down there at some point, hopefully in one of our travel series, to get down there, see him, play some golf, and, you know, really great guy. Jay, you're more than welcome to come back on anytime you'd like. We'd love to have you again. So, Alan, what'd you think?
Oh, he's a great guy. I've had pleasure meeting him at trade shows over the years, and he's sharp. He knows what he's talking about. And the Golf Course Owners Association has a very good advocate in Jay Caron, without question. And as far as getting down there, hey, to the car's gasped and ready to go, boys. Just saying.
A lot better weather down there than up here, I should say, all year round. I'm ready to get out of the cold ASAP.
Well, 1,000%.
I'll tell you what. I'm gonna be out of the cold. Well, not necessarily out of the cold. I'm definitely gonna be enjoying the good weather here in the Philadelphia market that we're gonna have this weekend, and teeing it up at one of the Lapio Golf Management properties without question. So our good friends over there, we always appreciate their support and sponsorship. But let's talk about someplace that's even warmer than Philadelphia. Certainly even warmer than Charleston. Aloha.
Well, Aloha week two, because obviously
week two.
Anyway, no, but listen, the last week's tournament lived up to expectations. Definitely, obviously, we had our picks. We know who was the winner. We're not even going to get into that because we're just going to get beyond that. I'm not even going to give him credit for that.
Hey, I got some type of glory here. Come on.
But let's get right into it. I know, obviously, it was a great interview and great little segment we had with Jay, but we got to make some picks here. We got to talk to her and figure out who we're going with and why we're going with them.
The Sony Hawaiian Open at Wailea, last year's champion Kyle Stanley. Known for last week was all about the bombers. This week it's premium on accuracy. You ready for this, boys? Because the golf course is only 7,000 yards.
Only, that's it. Like a driver pitching wedge for these guys, though, with how far they hit it.
And Andrew, your boy is leading the one of the top names in the field. There's three top tens: Webb Simpson, Harris English, which obviously we know what he did last week. We would not go to stop right there, and Colin
Morikawa.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm double checking because I had a name written down based on some stuff here, and I got to double check while we're still on the show if he's going to be in the field officially or not. However, I actually had somebody other than Colin Morikawa as my pick for this week. So, let me get back to you. I have to, I'm trying to search while we're recording.
Are you sure? Cause it seems like you only stick to JT and Colin.
No, I have a different pick. I just want to confirm it. So I don't sound like, you know, like I don't know what's going on, which is 95% of the time, but I want to make sure I sound like I know what's going on. 5%.
All right. So what we're going to do is we are in fact going to start a leaderboard, and we're going to post this regularly out on our social media, just tracking, you know.
Well, we got to start last week. Obviously I should be in first place.
Well, we should start back at Augusta.
We have to start, you know, at the beginning of
the 2021 calendar season.
Well, we weren't keeping them all. So, you know what? We'll give Christian. I'll take care of it, boys. I'll take care of it. I'm in charge of the stats.
Trust me. With my picks, I'm going to enjoy being in first right now because next week I'll probably be in third.
Well, why don't you throw down who your pick is right now? Or do you want me to throw some numbers at you first?
You throw some numbers at me first. Right. I got guys that I got my name on personally this week.
Top. Here's the latest odds I saw as we're recording on Wednesday night before the boys tee off on Thursday morning. Joaquin Niemann going off at 25-1 to win. Colin is right behind him. I don't exactly have that number, but then you've got some. Then you got an interesting one. Charles Howell III. They're talking about horses for courses. Charles Howell III, Matt Kuchar, and Webb Simpson are getting a lot of favorability in the out on the gambling boards, so to speak.
Listen, I think that the gambling boards, obviously, they look at all the stats that's involved, and let's face it, I mean, those names are some of the names that we associate with accuracy, right? And if that's what they say is the name of the game this week, then, you know, that's why they put them where they're at. I'll be honest with you. I think, and I just had to look through it, but I was confirmed that he is specifically in the field. He has been confirmed as good to go. Kevin Kisner. I know that is a completely, you know, not one of my two picks. He is.
I'm writing it down right now.
Okay, go ahead. I think Kevin Kisner, they just had an interview with him, which is, again, I wanted to confirm because obviously they do the COVID-19 test still and everything like that. So wanted to make sure that nothing came up. But, you know, Kevin Kisner makes a point. He goes to tournaments and he doesn't go there to, you know, place in the top five. He goes there because he truly thinks it's courses that he can win at this point in his career. He knows he's not long enough to be able to compete with the Brysons. However, he's accurate enough that he knows that he can.
I saw the I think maybe the same quote you're talking about where somebody asked him the question and he said, can you win at that? Well, no, I can't win at that course. But they're like, well, why are you there? Well, because 20 pays a pretty good check also.
Well, and listen, obviously.
You got to love Kiz.
Yeah, Kiz is Kiz. I mean, Kiz is probably one of the best, you know, hashtag boys on tour. Right. Like he's one of the guys and which is, I think, why a lot of common golfers tend to go towards him. But he's obviously, he's a phenomenal putter. I think we've obviously had the discussion before about Kiz, you know, losing in the playoff. He's always a really solid candidate when it comes to accuracy. And that's why I think, you know, if I'm going to go with an outside the box pick, I'm going with Kiz. I don't know what his odds are, but I'm going with him.
All right. Christian, who you got?
That's surprising, actually, that you didn't pick somebody besides Justin Thomas and Colin. But I'm going to go with the guy, international guy. He's not an American. Guy's really solid tee to green, in my opinion. And I think that he's bound to break out here and I think have a big season. I'm going Abraham Answer.
Wow. That's a solid pick.
He's because this tournament's known for how many fairways you hit consistently and how many greens you hit in reg, you know, and if you can make those putts this week, that's the person who's going to win at the end of the day. I know that's every tournament and stuff like that. But I mean, if you look at answer stats the last few seasons on tour. I mean, he's been up there and he's been knocking on the door.
I think you're right. I don't know. I think he has a chance to definitely win a couple of tournaments here and there. I don't know if he's going to be able to break through at the major tournament level yet, but I think he's ready to break through, you know, on multiple tour wins and, you know, in the season and stuff like that. But no, it's definitely a solid pick. I did not even think of him, to be honest with you. So
there's a lot of guys though on this tournament field though that you can throw up there, honestly. I mean, there's so many guys who are good at putting. I mean, Brandon Todd's another name that you could throw up there possibly who knocking on the door. My second pick would have been Daniel Berger. It was a toss up personally between the two. I like Berger. I like his short game. And I do truly think that, you know, getting that win down there in Texas last year, I think definitely helped his confidence a lot.
I think the, if I would go with the second one, it's actually, again, you mentioned already on the betting favorites, but I think it's a Cooch. I think it's a guy like Cooch. I think he is, like, same thing with what you mentioned with English. Like, he's won recently. He's playing some decent golf. It sets up, you know, pretty well for accuracy and playing, you know, Mr. Consistent. And that's obviously Cooch. You know, so I think, again, there's a bunch of different names, like, to your point. But I'm interested to hear.
I'm very curious to see who Alan picks.
Yeah, right. I'm curious to see.
Well, I was feverishly looking at – I was trying to feverishly look up a statistic because, you know, I have to speak stats to you boys. And I
don't you.
I could not find it, so I'm just going to wing it, folks. I hate to say that. I am going to – offer a shocking pick and say Harris English goes back to back.
Really?
Justin Thomas did it a few years back. I was trying to see if it, how many others have done it. I think JT may have been the only one that's done it in the same year. I think Harris English goes back to back.
I could see it happening. I mean, the guy's got confidence right now, and, you know,
he's got a ton of confidence right now, and you know, this is a tournament. I'm going to throw a couple of little interesting ones well before both of your time. Well, the one you might remember. This is a tournament where unusual things happen. Azal Aoki, we posted that on our social media where he jarred it over Jack Renner. I remember that. I was just getting into golf in 1983, and he jars it for eagle for walk off. Talk about dropping the mic. And then this is also where Michelle Wee in 2004 went out and literally missed the cut by one shot, shot 68 in the last round, competing against the men as a 14-year-old. So the Hawaiian Open is known for some unusual things taking place, and I'm going to say that the most unusual one is Harris English goes back-to-back, which is not seen.
Valuable pick, and Harris has a different, you know, kind of mentality to him this year. I mean, his goal right now, and he marked it, and he said it right after his
– Want to make the Ryder Cup.
Ryder Cup. And currently he's sitting in, I believe, at eighth right now, but eighth's not good enough for him. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you right now. I could see Harris having a kind of a, I'm not going to go as far as major, but I could see him winning a couple times, hopefully in 2021. I think that he's determined to make that team. I think he will make that team. And I think that, I think he's in for a big 2021 season.
I know that, obviously we're going to, when we get closer to obviously the official tournament of the Ryder Cup, I know we're going to, you know, as we get more perspective of who the team is and what the team is, but there's a lot of guys. I mean, on both sides, we talked about golf being in a phenomenal place. And again, I don't want to get too far off topic because we're talking Sony Open, but I mean, golf is in a phenomenal place because there's just so many guys on both sides for every major golf tournament that could be, and should be on, you know, their respective clubs. And, you know, obviously the Europeans have been the Europeans and they're always solid. We saw at the President's Cup most recently, there's a lot of young names on the international side that are starting to grow and become those, you know, those perennial players that we all talk about. But then from the U.S. side, I mean, obviously, you know, again, guys like Harris English, you know, guys who, let's face it, they are on a mission to take it to the next level. And I'm interested to see who ends up making that team down the line, because there's so many young guys too that should be on that roster. So mm-hmm.
Well, as Tony Leodora pointed out in his Golf Talk Minute, Tony is, by the way, folks, is on assignment, but he pointed out Harris has always been a journeyman player. He'd been middle of the packer kind of guy. Something's lit. And you can see the confidence in his game. And you know what? He hits it far enough. He obviously knows how to roll the rock. And I like to see him keep the pedal to the metal, keep on going.
I'd love to see him personally.
You talk about funny things on tour, or also just things on tour that you see. But I'm curious to see if Kiz breaks out those fancy little gadgets on the shoes that he, or the balls underneath his feet on the putting green, to help him work on his putting stroke before this week, because those were some of the most crazy things I've ever seen. I mean, it's anyway. Sorry, go.
Ahead, yeah, I was gonna say let's move on, because boys, there's another professional tournament going on. Also in Hawaii, the Mitsubishi Electric, celebrating their 25th anniversary of the Champions Tour, is there. And it is a stellar field. You've got 11 World Golf Hall of Famers, and I'll just rattle. We've got couples, Ernie, Retief, Montgomery, O'Meara, DL3, VJ, Sandy Lyle, Tommy Watson, Hale Irwin, Bernard Langer. I mean, star-studded, and most importantly, the three that were in a playoff last year, Miguel Angel Jimenez, who has the best warm-up.
Angel Jimenez?
Yeah, that's it.
That was Freddie so Couples. Badly butchered, I can't even not laugh at that. Sorry, keep going. I apologize.
Freddie Couples and Ernie Els, they were in the playoff last year. They're all back for this year. Combined, you got 180 tour wins, 28 majors. I mean, that's a star-studded field over there.
Here's the real question, and great. I didn't see the field list, so I'm hearing this for the first time myself. Is Phil in the field? That's the real question.
No.
Okay.
He's fireside.
Fireside with Phil. There we go. Phil, if you are listening by some way or form, if you would like to have a fireside with the 19th hole, we would definitely obviously appreciate it. Just need only like 10 minutes of your time to hear one good fireside with Phil, you know, story. But anyway, getting back to the Mitsubishi, I'm going to go with someone who really, is probably not a big surprise. Obviously, they're very consistent. That's Freddie Couples. I think Freddie's obviously a great player. I took your pick, so, you know, have at it. But I think Freddie's a solid player. Freddie's just always there. And you know, like, I don't know. He's just – I heard the name, and it's just something that just rings. So,
all right.
We're rolling Freddie.
Christian, who you got?
Well, first off, this is an incredible field. I mean, like you said, Alan, there's just so many major champions in this field, so many tour wins, and just like the history behind like all these people that are in this tournament this week. I think it's going to be a phenomenal tournament to watch. But my pick's Jay Haas. I like Jay Haas a lot. Reason is because I think Jay has a really good short game, to be honest with you. And I think that I've looked at it from the stats standpoint that if you win in Hawaii, you need to have a really good short game. I understand that, again, to my point, I just have to obviously make the putts and stuff like that. But again, it all comes down to, you know, your wedge game when it comes into Hawaii. And I think that Jay has a very phenomenal short game, and I think that Jay will get it done this week.
All right. Well, I'm just going to be short and to the point. Ernie Els, write it down. Done. There you go.
I'll see. Okay. I'll make sure to send you a text when he six putts on the first green again. But anyway,
you're not playing in the Champions Tour, buddy.
And that was at Augusta.
It doesn't matter.
You are not playing at the Champions Tour level yet.
I'm not playing at the Champions Tour level ever. Okay, let's be honest with ourselves here for a second. I'm just making a point to you that should he six putt or something crazy, I'm gonna be sending you a text. That's all I'm saying.
All right, I hear what you're saying, Christian. 18th green. Putting the flag in. Got any thoughts?
You know, my final thought, we obviously wanted to thank Jay again for coming on the show. It was great to have him. You know, he's more than welcome to come on at any given moment. And we had some phenomenal talks with him. Obviously, make sure you guys follow us on all social media accounts, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, we got a lot of great products coming out for you guys to really look at and kind of hopefully, you know, fight over. A lot of great products. I got to get my hand on them, obviously, and it's going to be a lot of fun moving forward. We got huge stuff coming here in 2021. And as always, hope you guys have a great week, and we'll see you guys on Monday.
Andrew?
My final thought, obviously we're rolling out a lot of different things, but I can't, because it just went live today, not say this is my final thought, which is our merch store is now officially live. We are running a very, very minuscule starting lineup to our merch store. We've had a lot of people, friends, family, and listeners of the show reach out. They've seen our logo, and they're like, where can I get it, and why can I not get it already? So we listened. We are always listening. So if you guys have any suggestions, obviously, please let us know. We're always trying to make this show better for you guys, the listeners, and our fans. But we do have a very special limited edition merch store going up with, you know, t-shirts, sweatshirts, you name it. So definitely need to check that out. We will be adding it to our links that are on all of our social media and the link tree. So that way it's really easy, quick little click through. With it going live, they are 15% off. I believe it's through the next couple of days. So if you are looking for, you know, some 19-hole merch as we get into the new golf season, definitely have to try that out. But that is my closing thought. I could not share that with the listening audience because, again, I can't remember how many days we had that special going on. So definitely want to keep them informed and making sure they get the best deals possible.
Excellent. And I'm going to restate something that that Christian said, which is our social media folks. We're very active over there. Please follow us on Facebook at Golf Talk Live, Instagram at Golf Talk Live, and on Twitter at golftalk_live. But I probably did that out of order because I really want to tell you about the Instagram one, which we just launched our contest for the January product of the month, which is, again, the Bottle Tee by our good friends at Greenskeeper. We have combined the Bottle Tee, which should be ready for shipment sometime in mid-February. We're putting that in conjunction with one of their patented Blue Tee packages, as well as a gift card from Golf Galaxy for $50. That is live. It's got to follow the contest rules. Got to be U.S. resident. And got to be over 18. It should be live out there. Runs through the 25th. We'll announce the owner on the 20th. Show on this Thursday, the 28th. That's it. I'm putting the flag in. My drink is empty. Christian, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Folks, hit it long and straight because Andrew.
It beats short and crooked. I was there, you ready. Go. When you said it, I was ready.
Oh man, I love it.
See, Christian, that's how you do it. Good night, folks. Have a good one.
Good night, folks.
When it comes to great golf in Philadelphia's western suburbs, the conversation always turns to Bella Vista Golf Course. This must-play facility, designed by Jim Blaukovich, is known for its great layout and even greater conditions. It's also home to La Masseria, an elegant facility for weddings, banquets, and private parties. For more information, go to bellavistagc.com. And don't forget their sister courses, Mainland Golf Course in Harleysville and Morgan Hill in Easton.